Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. It's time for We Have Communicators, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, iOS, and everything in between. I'm Michael Johnston, and I'm joined by Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, I'm here with my iThingy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How many iThingies do you have near you at this moment?
Well, if I open the drawer, probably... I don't know, half a dozen, maybe 10.
Yeah, wow. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Jeff Gamet, how many iThingies do you have?
I'm counting right now.
Do they have to start...
Eight.
I know I'm asking the question, but do they have to start with I to be an iThingy, or do they just have to be Apple things?
They have to start with I.
I counted iThingies.
One, two. I only have two. So I lose, and...
Oh, I lied. I only have seven.
Okay, well, the point is we have plenty of iThingies here. We have way more than we need.
Way more than we should.
Yep. And so...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I was almost going to say one thing isn't an iThingy, but it's a iPod video. Fourth generation iPod, which actually has a larger hard drive than any other iPod I think I own.
Yeah, I have an iPod in my... I forgot about that. So I have three iPod... what is it? It's the one right before they went to the metal casing. So it's an 80 gig, and I still use it occasionally. But yeah, so we're talking about the iPhone. And the top story, of course, is the iOS PDF security hole, which has been patched.
They were listening. Apple was listening.
Yeah, they were listening specifically to this podcast.
Yeah, I heard my rant on the last show about how Apple never releases a update patch and then promptly said, I'm going to make that guy look like an idiot.
Yeah, the next day.
It's the Atom update. I think that's what they were calling it internally.
Yeah, so 4.0.2 updates the PDF vulnerability, which the Jailbreak Me exploit. Or not exploit, the Jailbreak Me tool, the jailbreakme.com.
No, it's an exploit. It's just a benevolent exploit.
It uses an exploit to do something practical. But it could also be used by bad people to do something malicious. So for most people, it's being used for jailbreaking. So they updated it. 4.0.2 fixes that hole. And actually, for those of you who do jailbreak and enjoy jailbreak, like I do, you can... Of course, as long as you're on 4.0.1 or 4.0, you can still use the tool. Don't update to 4.0.2 and just download the PDF patch from Sarek and Cydia. It patches the same hole, which I did, so I won't be screwed up if someone decides to make an exploit.
And if you know what that means, good for you. If then, you don't, yeah. Don't jailbreak.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, so, and it also, interestingly enough, they pushed out an update for 3.2. Well, I guess it's for the iPad, right?
Yeah, it's 3.2.2 for the iPad.
Yep, so the iPad and the iPhone are both patched, and you can get that patch if you jailbreak through Cydia as well.
Now, the first generation iPhone and iPod Touch aren't included in this update, is that right?
As far as I know, they are not.
Interesting. I wonder if they're not susceptible to the exploit, or...
Well, they can't go to 4.0, right? So I wonder if...
Oh, that's right. And this is a 4.0 thing. All right.
I don't know if the exploit is specific to 4.0. I'm guessing it's not because it was also present in OS 10. I think it's a WebKit issue. But the Jailbreak Me site isn't for anything below 4. And in related jailbreak news, for some people like me, again, who went to do a jailbreak the other day and found that jailbreakme.com was not working, there was a DNS error with jailbreakme.com, which actually caused it to not work if you don't put the www in the front. So, but if you put www.jailbreakme.com, it was going to work. I think it's fixed now. So, but it scared me. I thought they took it down after I restored my phone.
That would be pretty bad for you.
That would suck. That would suck a lot. You know what's interesting? I don't know if any of our listeners have experienced this. I know this is a problem that a lot of people have reported, but I use the Nike Plus app on my iPhone, and I really enjoy it because it tracks my runs, and I get a nice lady that tells me how far I've gone and how fast I'm going, and sometimes...
I have a crush on her.
She's, you know, it's really cool because it also, occasionally famous people, like, I don't know, Fergie or... I don't think I've ever heard from Fergie, but they talk in your ear if you do something cool. Like Lance Armstrong. He'll say, hey, good job. Or Bono. Or, you know... other people. But anyway.
Seriously?
Yeah, you didn't know. Not Bono. I don't know. I'm just pulling.
Well, Lance Armstrong, definitely.
Lance Armstrong is definitely in there. And I think that if you, there's a secret in there. If you do something special, then Steve Jobs will, you know, tell you how awesome you are too. But anyway, back to what I was talking about. When I updated from 3 to 4, all of my run data is gone. It was just discarded. It still kept my fastest time and my total run amount, but my entire history was just discarded. I found that, you know, because I jailbreak, I checked out the file structure, and it's changed. It used to be an XML file for every run, but they've moved it to a database file. And for whatever reason, when they do the account migration, it just doesn't put that information in there. So if anybody's experienced this and possibly found a fix, let me know, because I would really like to get my runs back.
Are they just putting it in a MySQL, in one of the little MySQL Lite databases that they keep on there?
Yeah, they changed it over to that. Cool. Yeah.
So you should be able to, since you're jailbroken, I would imagine you could write something to parse the XML and then insert it into the MySQL Lite database.
If I knew how to do something like that, sure. Maybe you can help me with that.
I might be able to help you with that.
That'd be great. Oh, that would be so great if you could help me with that. But yeah, if anyone, let's just assume that nobody has gotten that to work, because it just seems like it. I've restored a few times and it just discards that information every time. So if anybody's gotten their Nike Plus data to move over from a 3.x installation to a 4.x installation, send us an email, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com.
I have a question about that.
Sure.
Doesn't it have a mechanism, or isn't there a thing where you can sync up that data with like Nike servers or something like that?
When you sync your iPhone with iTunes, it puts all that information up there. So it's up there on
some... And you can't suck it back down?
No. It goes through iTunes. And
how about if you use Trail Runner?
Does that run in the background? I guess it does now.
It's an application on your Mac, and it will suck your running data off also.
Oh, from the Nike app.
Yeah. It sucks it from the Nike app onto your Mac. So I'm wondering if there's a way to send it back from there to your iPhone.
No, I don't think so.
Are you saying that because you don't think so, or because you're too lazy to look?
Both, but I'm leaning more towards the I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking the same thing.
This is the thing I was... did I complain about this on this show last week?
I think regularly.
It was with my pick, because my pick was the iPhone extractor thing.
Yeah, which I used to find data, that I have all my data, thankfully, and so I saved it out.
Right, but you can't... Even that tool doesn't give you a way to put it back onto the device. And in this case, it wouldn't work because they changed how it's stored completely. So
right, and I assumed that... I tried renaming the folder that has all that information, just kind of renaming it to like a backup, and then putting that previous file on there, and it just... I assumed that it might look at it and say, oh, this is the old format, we're going to, you know, re-import it into the correct format, and it just...
Yeah. The solution is we take it out, we parse the XML, and we insert it into a MySQL database, and then we swap them.
Yep. That's going to have to be how it works.
Using the shell.
Yeah.
SSHing in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Good stuff. Okay.
Ouch.
It should work, though.
I sure hope so. Anyway, moving on to the white iPhone, the continuing white iPhone story. I heard earlier, I guess last week, that there were some rumors that the white iPhone might have been, they might have figured out the problem with the white iPhone and that it was in production. I think I saw that on 9to5 Mac or another site, but 9to5 Mac also kind of looked at the photos and found that there are a few discrepancies between this alleged, fixed white iPhone and the photos on Apple's website. So we're guessing it's fake. But UK carrier Orange has actually said that they don't expect the white iPhone until later this year, until the end of the year, I should say. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we won't see the white iPhone in the US before then, but it's
it also doesn't mean that
they know anything.
Orange knows anything.
Right. They could just be thinking, okay, well, at the very least, it'll be out at the end of the year.
Right. And then if it comes out earlier, then, hey, surprise everyone, it's out earlier.
Right. And I think that's why Apple went from the end of July date to the sometime this year date, right? So they wouldn't have to keep updating their estimates if they kept encountering problems.
That totally makes sense.
I want this press conference. So Apple holds a press conference. We've discovered the problem with the white iPhone. And we have a fix. The problem is it's white. The fix is we're shipping black ones.
The sad thing about that is Apple might actually end up doing that. They may have already done that.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
We call this midnight white.
Yeah, midnight white. Midnight,
yeah. There you go.
It's not that it isn't white. It's just that you can't tell. Yeah, okay.
It's not our fault that your eyes can't perceive this shade of white.
Yeah, you're not good enough to perceive this color of white. Anyway.
Only the cool people can see it.
Yeah, not cool
enough.
And
then no one would be willing to admit that
they can't see it. Everybody starts saying, oh, yeah, I have the white one. You just can't tell, can you? You're not cool enough.
And then they'll say, no, actually, I could.
This is becoming an Onion story, I think.
Well, you know what's even funnier, kind of funnier about it is that I believe that all of the cases that Apple offers with its free case program are black anyway.
Oh, yeah?
Correct? So you're going to get a white iPhone in your free black case, and then it's going to be black.
Don't make me cry, Adam. All right. So did you guys hear about this... one of Apple's supply managers has been caught receiving kickbacks from Asian accessory manufacturers.
Jeff knows all about that.
Who knows all about
Jeff
that?
Jeff does.
Jeff?
I think.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that.
Yeah, fill us in. Let us know. What's going on?
Okay. And by the way, Adam, the excitement in your voice when you said that, awesome.
Right, well, you've been writing stuff up, right? Or have you been writing stuff up?
Yeah, I started writing Saturday morning.
Yeah.
After I found a working computer. Yeah. Okay, so there's a mid-level global supply manager at Apple. Well, now former manager at Apple, that over the past few years had set up this scheme where he was taking kickbacks and bribes from part suppliers in Asian countries. And what these companies were getting in exchange was early information and confidential information about Apple's plans for the iPhone and iPod product line. And he got caught. And so in addition to being slammed with, I believe it was 23 counts of fraud and related crimes, Apple's also suing him civilly, claiming that he managed to score over $1 million over like 3 years from all these companies. And he had an elaborate scheme. He had these dummy companies set up in Asian countries under his wife's name. And he had a pretty good system set up all the way up until he got caught. And now one of the companies, their name sounds like they're a transformer.
Pegatron.
Pegatron.
My favorite company, my favorite supplier. So I hope they don't get slapped.
Is it because they sound like a transformer?
Absolutely.
That's just awesome. Pegatron, activate. So Pegatron got pulled into this a little bit too, because they happened to buy a company that was paying out bribes to this guy.
Yep.
And so it seems likely that Pegatron was unaware that these payments had been going out. But they have since suspended the manager that's in charge of that division. And it's like Carrion Electronics or something like that.
Yeah, the Cater Electronics is the
Cater Electronics
is a subsidiary company. I guess Pegatron purchased Cater in 2008, in late 2008, and this scheme was only going on between 2005 and 2008. Is that correct?
As I recall, Pegatron said that payments were happening back in 2007. So I don't remember if they said there were payments happening earlier than that. But either way, there is that break point between when the payments were happening and when Pegatron bought the company.
Right, yeah.
Hmm. Do you think maybe it got alerted when Pegatron bought this company? Because typically, don't you have to do like auditing and stuff like that when you do a big buyout?
Well,
maybe when the investigation kicked off, like they went, hey, there's something weird here.
Well, if what the suspended manager said is true, then excuse me, then probably no red flags would have gone up, because the division manager thought that the money that was going out was to pay commissions to sales reps.
So
if the money was covered, or the trail was covered well enough that the person actually running that company wasn't aware that's what was going on, then you probably wouldn't have any other red flags go up. And considering it's in China, we don't, at least I don't know what type of scrutiny businesses have to undergo when they're being bought and sold.
Interesting.
Yeah, and also an update to the story. The guy, the manager at Apple that's been arrested and for all this, Paul Devine, actually has pled not guilty, as you know.
Which is totally expected in a situation like this.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how little money we're talking about. Like, it seems like he had an elaborate scheme set up and now, didn't really get a lot of cash out of it over 3 years.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, do you know if this was simply so they could land contracts with Apple, or was this also from the first read that I went over this, I assumed that he was giving out specs for the devices so they could produce early accessories. And so what were the kickbacks for exactly? Or do we know?
I don't think they've said explicitly yet, but from what I've seen, it looks to me like the kickbacks were to get information about what Apple had planned or what Apple was planning, so that they would be able to put together their proposals for parts in such a way that would be more favorable to themselves.
Sure.
And then they were also getting information about what Apple had plan-wise for new design features, which gave them the ability to produce cases ahead of time and in some cases maybe some spare parts ahead of time, which may account for the surprising number of leaks that we've had coming out of Asia over the past couple of years. We're seeing all these parts and there's no word from Apple about something new coming out, and then cases showing up a couple weeks before Apple announces products. And it would all fit in quite nicely with what Mr. Devine has been up to.
Yeah.
Which also tells me that if the information can get to him or from him to these suppliers, there's no reason why this information couldn't have gone farther and ended up with Apple competitors. You know, not like I'm thinking that RIM or HTC was out hunting for this type of information, because I don't think they would do that. But if the information made it to the right people in the companies and they knew what they were looking at, and then they could start making product decisions and then presenting that to their supervisors, the supervisors wouldn't have any clue about what was going on, but all this information would really make it a lot easier for companies to produce, say, Android phones that better compete with the iPhone.
Right.
Be interesting to see if those leaks kind of stop now, if that would prove that this was the one kind of point of hole in Apple's system.
Even if there's
in there.
Even if there's other holes, they plugged themselves on Saturday morning.
Yeah. Yep.
Assuming these people have any level of intelligence at all.
Yeah, exactly. They've also left the country, hopefully.
Yeah. So, yeah, speaking of people that have no intelligence at all, and I have no idea if this is on our show notes. Michael, did you see the thing about the FedEx driver that was robbed at gunpoint and some Apple gear was stolen out of his delivery truck? And it was other FedEx employees that committed the crime.
What? No. Okay. Are there any more details besides that? Or?
Oh, of course there
okay, yeah,
are.
Yeah, keep going. Let's, what's the deal here?
Okay, so the deal is driver out, I think it was in the Bay Area. He's out doing his FedEx deliveries, and a gold Buick pulls up beside wherever he's stopped for a delivery. Four guys in masks jump out with a sawed-off shotgun, hold him at gunpoint, make him open up the back of his truck, and then make off with a bunch of boxes. Most of it's Apple product deliveries. They hop in their gold Buick, and they take off. And I guess there were other FedEx drivers or other people in the area that witnessed what was going on. So they were able to get enough information about this Buick that the police were able to figure out who it belonged to. And it just so happens it's a FedEx employee. Well, so now, later on, that same Buick that was used in this robbery shows up at one of the FedEx sorting facilities, and one of the guys that was involved in the robbery gets out and goes to work. He bummed a ride off someone in their vehicle that was used in the crime to get to work.
Wow.
So he gets picked up and arrested. His buddy, who I think had the car, gets arrested. Turns out they both worked on the same sorting line, so it would be very easy for them to be watching and going, okay, Apple box, or whatever their criteria was for what they wanted to hit. And then they know which truck has more of what they want. So then off they go and hit that truck. So.
Yeah, it's amazing the kind of information those guys have. I'm surprised we haven't seen crimes like this, not this stupidly executed, but just done more often. Because when I was at Best Buy the morning of the iPad launch, the original iPad launch, one of the guys in line was a employee and knew the manifest information. So he had known what got delivered the night before in terms of the box size and the weight. And could pretty much calculate how many iPads from that, you know, they had. So they received, you know, so many pallets and so many boxes fit on a pallet and it weighed X amount. And it was pretty easy to do the math. And he was pretty right on with the number of iPads they actually had.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So important lesson for the day, kids. Crime doesn't pay. Especially if you have a gold Buick and leave a sawed-off shotgun on the back seat.
Well, what's the advice that that Dave and John give at the end of their podcast? Do you guys know?
See, I never listen
I
to
don't
the
know.
End.
The moral I always give out is don't get caught.
No, that's it. It's don't get
don't
caught.
Get caught.
That's rule number one is don't get caught. I forget what rule number two is, but I probably live by it.
That's right. Don't get caught.
Don't get caught is the most important rule. Oh, so, rule number two is don't forget your sunglasses.
See, that's an important rule, too, especially if you live in Colorado.
Or anywhere where there's sun.
But there's a lot more UV that gets to us here because the atmosphere is thinner.
Yep.
So your sunglasses are really important here, even on cloudy days.
Good to know. Good to know. Okay. So anyway, moving on. Have we talked about the Apple TV possibly getting the iOS having a new operating system? Of course, the Apple TV currently runs on, I think, Tiger still. Mac OS X Tiger. It's a stripped down version of Tiger with a Celeron chip. Is that correct? Is it a Pentium or a Celeron? It might be a Pentium chip.
It's probably a Pentium.
Okay. Yeah, probably not.
I can't imagine it being
Celerons are too sucky. Just one level above sucky. Anyway, so the next generation Apple TV has been rumored to come out, I think it's the beginning of this next year. And Gadget has received more details regarding the next generation Apple TV. They say that from what they hear, it will not play 1080i or 1080p video, and it will actually be limited to 720p video.
Like it currently is.
As it currently is, yeah, which Apple calls high def. But they point out that that's interesting because the A4 chip is definitely capable of doing 1080p video.
And well, you're assuming that they're going to use an A4 chip.
Well, that's also, I think, one of the details that Engadget has received is that it will be an A4 chip.
Yeah, my Jedi instincts are telling me that Engadget's info is wrong.
Okay, well, to recap what Engadget has been reporting for the last few months, they say it will be an iOS device, so it'll be running a very similar version of iOS. It will possibly have applications, although they don't know if there's going to be cross-pollination between the iPhone and iPad applications. I'm guessing probably not. It'll probably have its own flavor of applications, which makes sense if it even does have applications. But the big points are that it will not have a lot of storage. It'll have a very small amount of storage and rely on streaming instead, which a lot of people are thinking this ties into the huge data center. Where is that? In
North Carolina.
And or it will probably stream from your computer as the current Apple TV does. They're also thinking, they're also hearing reports that it will be renamed iTV instead of Apple TV. And if you remember back when they initially announced the coming of the product, not the actual availability of it, they had it codenamed iTV before they called it Apple TV.
Right. I might be like the only person thinking this, but I'm just not believing that Apple TV is going to switch over to iOS and become a little more than a streaming device that ultimately ends up with its own third flavor of apps. It seems too awkward for what Apple does.
Okay. We talked a little bit about this on a day six episode for Mac OS X, and I wasn't really buying it either. But now I'm listening to Michael, I'm listening to you kind of say the things around it, and it kind of it's starting to make sense because what the iPad is resolution is 1024x768, right?
Yep.
So that's WXGA resolution, is that right? Something like that.
I'm not
720p
sure,
is really close to that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I would imagine you could run existing iPad apps in the same resolution and then you wouldn't really have to tweak them too much. Okay. Mm. And then the other thing that we know is that a big deal with the Apple TV would be its media integration and the kinds of content you could get on it, right? And we know that Apple's supposedly, well, we don't know, but supposedly Apple's been trying to do deals with the TV studios and the movie studios and all those folks, and they're not really getting anywhere, right? But there are already iPad apps for a lot of that stuff. There's going to be Hulu for the iPad. You've got Netflix for the iPad. You've got the ABC app. There's lots of already video streaming apps that are already ready to go on the iPad. So it gets really interesting if you have a $99 set-top iTV box that runs existing iPad apps.
Well, okay. Yeah. So the problem I see with having applications that are written for the iPhone or the iPad running on an Apple TV device is your TV is not a touchscreen. But
what if it works with your new Magic Trackpad?
It would still require
a pointing device.
How about if
your
it's designed
finger on a trackpad?
Yeah, a trackpad would totally make that work. However, here's what I think is another possibility, which is if Apple is working on this little essentially pocket-sized device that functions like an Apple TV but gives you iOS app features as well, why not instead make a device that communicates wirelessly with what you already have that does all of that instead of duplicating it? And so now you have a device that's designed to stream the content on your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad wirelessly to your Apple TV. And it takes out a level of latency because instead of requiring you to go through the network and back, it's doing a straight connection of some sort. Now, I'm the idea guy. I'm not the tech guy. So I don't know what magic has to happen wirelessly for that to be a really cool thing. But that would give you all of the features of your iPad or your iPhone on your big screen. And you wouldn't have to figure out, well, what other devices do I have to get to make this come together? And how many parts do I have to add in before this starts becoming kludgy?
Right. Apple also had some sort of patent a while back for like a multi-axis accelerometer kind of Wiimote kind of remote control or something like that too, I think.
Well, they're probably using that in the iPhone 4. With the gyroscope.
But this was more like a traditional remote, just, you know, with like a bar that you could hold and control.
Oh, I see. Like, okay, so like a Wiimote kind of deal. But, you know, they would have to have a, pointing device, I meant the mouse cursor.
Right.
So you'd have to have a mouse cursor up there clicking on the iOS stuff, which you can actually do right now if you jailbreak and install a utility to do that. But I feel like that just would not make sense for the way Apple likes to do things. I don't think they would want to do that. Although a universal app that, you know, you say, oh, just tweak a few things and make it so it makes sense on the iTV, then sure.
So now you're going to tell developers that they need to make three versions of their app, the one for the iPhone, the one for the iPad, and the third version for the Apple TV display, which, by the way, might be one of several different TV sizes or resolutions.
See, now this is why I don't think it would make sense to have that kind of cross-pollination at all, because it encourages the developers of iPhone apps to make apps, to just take their iPhone app and turn it into an iTV app, and I don't think Apple wants people doing that. I think they would just say, okay, there are iOS apps and iTV apps.
Yeah, it could end up being a really small, select, you know, specialized subset of apps that are just...
Right.
Because TV apps have to be specifically designed. I don't know. You're right. That, you know, that there could really be a crossover. I mean, maybe Apple could solve the problem. But this was sort of the original argument I was making for a new Apple TV device is for me, anything Apple's going to do with Apple TV has to be about the content that is on it. Doesn't really matter anything else that is available there. If it doesn't have access to content and affordable cheap access to content in the market that's shaping up with Google and Netflix and all these other players, then it's really not, there's no point in doing it unless they give us some other thing. And that's when this argument of apps came up. So, you know, apps might take that kind of device to a new level, but still it gets tricky, right, as we're pointing out.
Right. And we've seen other devices with, you know, TV applications, and it might make sense for Apple to just say, okay, you can develop for the device. So if Netflix wants to do it, they can. And if Hulu wants to do it, they can. But there's also that possibility that they won't. I doubt that they won't, of course, because they already have apps on the iPad and iPhone, and they're familiar with iOS. But I think having that separation makes a lot of sense, just even just conceptually, because it's a different thing. It's a thing for your TV and not for your for your hands.
So do either of you have a TiVo?
I do not.
Yes.
Okay. So, Adam, how often have you thought, I really wish I could add apps to my TiVo?
You actually can. They have some apps, and they're really pretty pathetic. Yeah, you remember there's like all kinds of, there's like TiVo games and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're really crappy little things. But, you know, my point
is, there's a podcast RSS, you know, directory reader thingy that never got populated. But again, the problem with it was content.
Yeah, it was definitely a content problem. And for a home entertainment console, which is what Apple TV is, I think that the majority of people don't sit down in front of their TV and go, I'd really love to add some apps to this.
Right.
Now if it's like a gaming console, okay, great. I've actually bought games for my Wii that I download. And then, of course, I go to the store, Amazon, whatever, and I buy a disc. So I do both there. But my Wii is not a home entertainment system. And that's something that I look at the Apple TV trying to fit in as. It's a home entertainment appliance, like a TiVo is.
Wait a minute. You didn't get the Netflix disc for your Wii yet?
Oh, I totally did. I ordered it right away. And it's just sitting there by my TiVo.
Oh, I use it all the time. It's awesome.
Now, see, I stream Netflix through my TiVo HD because I'm going HDMI straight through.
Right.
So I can have the higher quality shows when available. With TiVo, or excuse me, with Netflix on my Wii, you give that up.
Yeah, I have an old TiVo, so it was not an option for me.
Now,
it's all about the content. It's not about, I mean, you're proving my point. It's really not about the delivery mechanism, right? You get it through your TiVo, I get it through my Wii, and that's the space that Apple just wants to be in, is a delivery mechanism. But it's my understanding they're just having a heck of a time getting anybody to play ball with them, I think, because iTunes is such a juggernaut already, and everybody's worried that it's going to happen again in this streaming space.
Now, wouldn't it make more sense for Apple to make a device that's slightly more open, so it's you may not call it apps, you might call it components.
wait,
Michael, are
Apple,
you stoned?
And open in the same sentence.
I know, but if you have a device that is meant to have modular providers, such as stuff from Hulu or from Netflix or whatever, where you have, you know, like in the same way that with Safari, you can go to the guide and you can install extensions for it and add extensibility to it. So you have the Apple TV that runs the standard Apple TV interface with streaming from your computer, and, you know, you can check out the iTunes store and all the stuff that that involves. But you also have the ability to get these components. And so Netflix might offer it for free. Hulu might, you know, offer theirs for $10 a month as they do on the iPad. But it's kind of a, you know, it's like developing applications for an iPhone, but it's on the Apple TV and it's developing for content.
Now, you're aware that Apple already has that available. It's called the Macintosh.
Well, right, but we're talking about the Apple TV.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, I think this is a race that Apple is way late in getting to. You know, they've kept Apple TV a hobby and haven't done anything with it, and I think there's other solutions and things that are taking off out there. And I don't know. I don't know where the business play is for Apple. So I'm even, you know, 50-50 on whether they update the Apple TV at all, to be honest.
Yeah, the Apple TV that I have is, I've talked about it before, it's really slow, and that's one of the main reasons I don't use it. I have most of my, well, I would say most of the content that I care about as far as video content, I just by default, if I get something from Netflix, I'll rip it with Handbrake, or, you know, occasionally I'll go through some of my old library and either, you know, rent it from Netflix and then rip it that way, or just convert it over to an H.264 because, you know, for one, H.264 video is really good as far as I can tell. And it works with the Apple TV, and it also works with my my iPhone and my iPad, depending on how I encode it. And I also have now with Air Video, it's just super great. So I just have, I just by default throw it in a format that my Apple TV can recognize, but still I find myself never using the Apple TV. It may be that, you know, other people are using my TV a lot of times when I would rather use it, and I just kind of go for my iPad. It's tough to say. You know, if this is a useful thing, it sounds like a lot of people who used to be big cheerleaders of the Apple TV just completely ditched it in favor of a Mac Mini. And I have a Mac Mini now that's running all of the content that my Apple TV has access to. And I'm considering just hooking my Apple TV or my Mac Mini up to the TV and just selling the Apple TV.
And see, I love my Apple TV. Probably for the very reasons that you're getting tired of it, which is it's a device that I don't even have to think about. It does a couple things well, and that's all I want it to do.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I love that it's just an appliance. The only thing is that for me, a lot of times it stops acting like an appliance when it starts slowing down and I can't make it work.
And I never have problems like that with mine.
Maybe I just need another one.
It just runs.
I can't. See, I never have that. Do you see your content? Is the content that you access, is it stored on the Apple TV, or do you stream it from a computer?
It's both.
And do you see any slowing depending on which one you decide to go with, if it's streamed or if it's local?
If the computer that I'm streaming from is doing a bunch of other things, then occasionally I'll have some stuttering issues, and but that's pretty much it.
I think it
now,
might. Go ahead.
Do you have a wired or wireless network that your Apple TV's on?
It's wireless, but it's 802.11n.
And see, I have my Apple TV Etherneted into my network, and the computer I primarily stream from is on Ethernet also.
Yeah, the only thing that's wireless in this equation is my Apple TV, so that might be the issue, but I also think it might be an iTunes problem.
Yeah, sorry, my Apple TV is wireless, and I don't have a problem, although I typically am streaming content from a machine that is wired.
Yeah.
So I have one end wired and the other end wireless. The one thing I'm wondering about, Jeff, is yours hacked?
Yes, it is right now.
And mine's
I'm thinking
not.
Of unhacking it.
Yeah, I unhacked mine because I had issues way back when. This was, you know, years ago. I haven't tried it again. It was great when it was hacked. I absolutely loved it because I could pull in RSS feeds and do all kinds of neat things with it. But I fell back to what Jeff is saying, the things that it does and was designed to do, it just does really well, and it's just always there when I need it.
And that's why I've resisted hooking a computer up to my TV permanently, because I don't want to have to walk up to it and type on a keyboard or have a wireless keyboard or a mouse or anything like that. I just like the 6-button remote, and I can just jump through the list and do the thing. That's that's the great thing about it. And it's a TV in my mind, and that's, I want it to act like an appliance.
Yes. Yeah. You got it, because I have my Mac Mini hooked up to another TV, and it's annoying because alerts pop up, software updates, you've got to reboot it, you've got to, like, you have none of that with the Apple TV. You just flip over to it, oh, hey, there's the Apple TV,
and it's just waiting.
It. Yeah. It's just waiting to be used. So, you know, if Apple could just do, if they left the Apple TV exactly the same with all the same features that it currently has today, and added Netflix streaming built in, and cut the price in half, they'd sell. That's all they have to do to sell a new version.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, that makes sense. Again, going back to the iOS thing, right? So we already have Netflix on our iPads and our iPhone, right? That came out finally. There's Netflix for the iPhone? I don't know. Did it?
No, actually, it's not out for the iPhone yet.
Okay. Well, they
got me excited, Michael.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. I didn't look. But they already know how to program. Not a great app, but it definitely works. They already know how to put it on an iOS device. They already know how to get Hulu on an iOS device. They know how to get these great media items on there. And in that way, Apple doesn't need to make special deals with these companies. They can just leave it up to them. Do you want to be on our really cool device? Netflix is already on board, I'm sure. If Apple has this in the pipeline, Netflix will totally sign up to make an app for it.
Of course it would. I mean, Netflix, their whole thing is to be ubiquitous.
Of course. So if they have Netflix, I think if they just get Netflix in addition to the iTunes store on this new Apple TV device, then it'll be much more popular, first of all. And then because of that, the other content providers, if they're not sure about doing it, they're going to get on that device. You know, and then Apple doesn't have to worry about making deals.
Now, okay, so now here's another argument I have against having a lot of extra apps available for the Apple TV. And it's the complexity. If you go beyond what you're doing with Apple TV right now, then you're back into what Adam was talking about, software updates and dialogues and alerts. And now you're suddenly talking about a Windows Media, Home Theater, Presence, User Experience, whatever the hell long name Microsoft has for their Windows Home Media, yeah, whatever thing. And really, who in the real world, regular TV watching people, want to deal with that? They want it comes on and it works. So my guess is that if Apple ever strikes a deal with Netflix or any other streaming content provider, it won't be something where we go in and intentionally seek out an application. It will be a software update that's pushed out to Apple TV with Apple's own interface, and it will fit in seamlessly and elegantly with what's already there.
Well, see, with the iPhone and the iPad, you can argue that those are appliances in the same way that the Apple TV is, although you do have more, it's definitely more intimate because you have closer access to it and stuff like keyboards and that kind of thing. But
and I would disagree with you, but continue.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you why.
Okay. But, you know, I think that Apple could easily make something that would not be cumbersome to the person using the product. They could say, you know, here's the module guide, and it's just a list of providers, as they have with podcasts. You know, instead of downloading a podcast, you're just downloading this little module. It might even appear to be a shortcut. You know, it just depends on how they wrap this thing. I think that they could wrap it up in a way that makes a lot of sense for the Apple TV, and it would still be something where whatever content provider is making this application for the Apple TV has to stay within certain guidelines to make it work, and it has to be vetted by Apple as applications do now for the iPhone. I think that would not, that's definitely not a far-fetched scenario.
Did we kill the ITV Apple TV story yet?
Almost.
I think we're having a good discussion about it.
All right, so Michael, here's why I think you're wrong on the comparison between Apple TV and iPad and iPhone as similar devices, and it's because even Apple has a very clear distinction between what these devices are. While Apple calls the iPad a content consumption device, they clearly understand that it's also a content creation device. Whereas the Apple TV is very, very clearly nothing more than a consumption device. And once you try and change how users have to interact with that, as far as, well, do I need to go find other applications and which ones do I have installed and why can my friend watch Netflix and I can't, you stopped treating this, and now it's another computer that you're bringing into the living room. And I don't think Apple ever wants us to think of Apple TV as a computer in our living room, even though that's exactly what it is.
I don't think that, I think it's just a matter of presentation.
I think it could go to Apple just having, they could move it to iOS, they could open up apps. I think you're kind of right, Michael, with people like Netflix, but where it's just a vetted, really, you know, only through Apple kind of apps, not like the vetted app store we have now that's an open marketplace, but
right. It would be
where
much
Apple does a deal with Netflix, they do a deal with Hulu, they do a deal with, and they build specialized apps for the Apple TV platform or the iTV platform or whatever it ends up being called. And then they deliver them through a download system that they have built into the device. You know, just a simple download system that says, okay, here is 20 channels of apps that we have that we think are good and you can add on to your TV if you want. Some of them have service behind them that you have to pay extra for, and we'll handle the payments for that. Otherwise, you know, here's a couple free ones and away you go. And, sure. And that's just it. And if you want to make an app for the Apple TV, you have to go to Apple and do a deal.
And it has to be very specific. It's probably going to be way more strict than the iPhone App Store, because they want to keep that appliance feel to the Apple TV.
You got it.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing Apple saying, hey, give us your apps, and letting people choose which apps go on Apple TV.
Right.
I have a feeling that if Apple does something like that, it's an all or nothing thing. If they strike a deal with Netflix or Hulu or whoever, they do everything on the back end and just push out a software update. By the way, you have this new service. If right. you want to take advantage of some of the features it has, yes, you have to pay, but it's there. And then it's not even a matter of people trying to figure out, well, do I have the right app installed to be able to watch that service? It's just there. And that leaves it as still a simple appliance. It just periodically, everyone gets pushed out the same stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, either way, I want a new Apple TV. I think it's way overdue. I want a better one.
Well, they better hurry, otherwise it's going to be too late.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah, and I definitely would love to have some type of streaming service on there. Although, unless Apple figures out a way to do it so that it doesn't eat into their iTunes store sales, I don't see it happening. Because all these devices tie back into the iTunes store. And if Apple can't sell their own content, then they don't have a lot of incentive to support their own devices, actually.
You know, Apple has to realize, though, that those are two distinctly different consumer behaviors. I don't know how it is for you, Jeff, but I don't run around going, not buying stuff on iTunes because I have a Netflix streaming account or I have another vehicle for getting. I mean, it's very rarely, maybe once in a while, where I'll go, oh, it's actually on Netflix streaming. I don't need to buy it. But there's right now, at least, very little crossover. I mean, Netflix is never going to have first run stuff right away. I think Apple's getting some of that stuff a little bit earlier. I don't know. There's this nice balance. And it's like, if I want to own a piece of content or I want to rent a movie from iTunes, I'm going to do that. And I don't really think about the fact that I have the streaming stuff over here on the other side. And then you look at things like ABC, which is all ad supported anyway, or even Hulu, which has ads. You still have the thing where, oh, I want to get that season of that TV show. You know what? I don't want the ads. I'm not going to go with the $10 Hulu thing. I'm just going to pay the extra and get it from Apple. So I don't know if that's as much of a concern.
I have a feeling that for someone with the numbers or an Excel spreadsheet in Apple headquarters, it's something they're looking at closely, but they're probably aware that there's a lot of people like me and you that don't have that crossover. And I'm exactly like you. There's content that I go to Netflix for, and then there's content that I go to the iTunes store for. And a lot of that content would be like first run stuff that I can't get anywhere else. Like, I wanted the new season of Doctor Who, so I bought a season pass to through the iTunes store and got the whole season that way. But when I want to go and watch some of the older stuff, well, maybe I have some of the DVDs, or I'll go and check Netflix and then watch some old content that way.
Yep.
We shall see what the future brings. Hopefully they don't kill the Apple TV.
I hope they don't kill it.
I want to see a better one.
It's a very cool device.
Yep. Yep.
Our next story is a short one, right? This should go quick.
Which one are we talking about?
the CMA iPhone.
The CDMA iPhone, yeah. So according to John Gruber, the CDMA Verizon iPhone is rumored to be in the engineering verification test phase, which is right below the design or device verification test stage, which is
where it gets stolen.
Which is where, yes, that's where, yeah, exactly.
Now known as the iPhone theft verification phase.
Yeah. If it can be stolen, then it's good. Yeah. So I guess this indicates that it's on track for a release in January. In addition,
that's assuming this is all legit.
Sure. In addition, 9to5 Mac, I believe, has received information from a source that there is some information in the current builds of iOS indicating that there are other devices being being used and getting ready for field testing. I believe it was the model numbers were iPhone 3.2 and iPhone 3.3. I think the iPhone 4 is iPhone 3, right? 3.1?
I can't remember. The numbers are so weird.
I don't pay enough close attention to that stuff.
I believe it. I'm almost sure. So the iPad was iProd 1.1. And then eventually became iPad 1.1, is renamed. So there's the... Anyway, so that the fact that it's not iPhone 4.1 indicates that it's not a big change as the iPhone 4 was to the iPhone 3GS. So that indicates that it might just be a CDMA change.
Now...
sure, you know.
Okay, so here's my idea, which up until this whole Paul Devine thing happened was all the CDMA stuff is fakety-fake. So knowing that he's been leaking information and assuming that he may have had information about a CDMA iPhone, okay, now it's more plausible to me that this is actually in the works. I do not, however, think it's for Verizon as much as the Verizon lovers would want it to be. I think this is for the China market.
Right.
Where we have the world's hugest, most bigified population, and you have the largest cell phone carriers in the world. Why not make the phone that works for that single proprietary CDMA network?
Sure. Yeah,
I think that's more likely.
Yeah, honestly, I think we're all a little bit tired of the rumors, the Verizon phone. but the other interesting bit in this...
Can I add something to that? Because I have been in the camp with Jeff and you, and I'm starting to wane a little bit or falter a little bit. I'm curious to know if, Jeff, if you think there's a possibility they might be... these rumors might be getting mixed up. But I do think they're going to do one for China. No doubt. There's 500 million.
Kajillion.
Yeah. customers available in China, something like that. I had the number in front of me when I covered it on my show. Now it's escaping me right now. I want to say 500 million just on China Mobile, like 500 million people. That sounds right.
That's a lot of potential customers.
Yeah. The people who are making me start to falter and maybe believe that Verizon's getting the iPhone are AT&T. At the very least, AT&T exclusivity is coming to an end because they have been over the last year kind of prepping analysts and people that they're not going to have the iPhone anymore. And most recently, it was their what do they call the filing that they have to do with the?
Oh, right.
Q10,
something like that.
Yeah, they did a Q10 filing, and within that, they said they were going to be, you know, they are expecting a down cycle because they're losing some very, what they call them, like desirable exclusive contracts or for some very desirable devices or something like that. I forget specifically what they said, but that's just another thing a while back, they've been saying, oh, we don't think when we lose the iPhone, it's really going to affect our business. So they're kind of like prepping the media and the analysts and their investors that this thing is going away. And the fact that they did that kind of says to me that at least they're losing exclusivity. And if AT&T was going to take the iPhone somewhere once that exclusivity is gone, sure, they can do T-Mobile, which I think they will do because it's easy. But
right.
Verizon's where they're going to want to be anyway. And my only counter argument has been the LTE network, but as many people have pointed out, the LTE is really not going to be in wide circulation until the end of 2011, if that.
I would be surprised if it's in wide circulation by the end of 2011.
Right, exactly. So Apple could have a year if they got a Verizon iPhone out in January, February. They could have more than a year to sell that device into that market. And then there were some numbers done by two different groups that said like 30 to 40% of AT&T customers would switch, which has got to be scary for AT&T because that's, I think, the number of customers they say that came to the network. About 40% of their iPhone customers are new to AT&T. So it's like they're going to zero back out.
Yeah, wow.
If those numbers are true.
Sure.
Well, whenever AT&T loses their exclusivity, you're going to see people jumping around, you know, like salmon swimming upstream. It'll just be chaos. But I think any carrier that has an exclusive deal, when they know that exclusive deal is ending, that's something that they've planned for. So, you know, it's something that AT&T is hopefully ready for and expecting. I have a feeling that the number of people that are saying, oh, hell yeah, I'm jumping ship right away, are saying that from an emotional standpoint. But when it comes time to actually make that jump and they realize what it costs, and yeah. That's not just an AT&T thing. All the carriers are going to give it to you up the butt when you try and break your contract and move early.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll see nearly as many people leave. And I think we'll see a lot of people once – whoever else gets the iPhone in the U.S., once they have it, we'll see people complaining about all the same things with bandwidth issues and dropped calls. It's not going to be any different regardless of which carrier it's on.
Hopefully it'll improve the situation in AT&T. Maybe it'll get rid of some people who are data hogs.
Exactly. Well, De La Vega, I mean, Ralph De La Vega said that. He said, you know, our contracts will keep our customers loyal.
It's going to keep me loyal. I don't care that much. I'm just going to stay with AT&T. I don't care. Another interesting bit of information that came out of the source code, I guess, I don't know if it was source code, but the code discovery in iOS 4 that revealed the iPhone 3.2 and 3.3. There's also a listing for iProd 2.1, which, as I said before, iProd was the code name for the iPad before it was renamed to iPad in the code. So iProd 2.1 indicates that it'll be a significant change. It won't just be a few chips moved around. It'll probably be a significantly different product. Leading a lot of people to think that this is talking about the rumored 7-inch iPad that the Economic Daily reports that Taiwanese companies have won a number of component contracts for the iPad 2, which I don't know if that's what they're calling it or if the Economic Daily news is saying that it'll be called iPad 2. But regardless, they're saying that it'll be a 7-inch version of the iPad and that it will be out by Christmas.
No way.
not a snowball's chance.
Yeah, this is, see, not only, if you just say, okay, it's totally possible that Apple's going to do that, they also...
Then you're smoking crack.
Right, okay, so you're smoking crack, but you also have to get all these applications that are designed for a 9.7-inch screen to work on a 7-inch screen. And yeah, you can do it, but it requires the developers to do it. And it's another thing... And it's just a slightly different size. You know, it kind of goes back to the rumors about a different sized iPhone. You know, I guess we could have a similarly dense screen, so it has the same resolution on that 7-inch screen. It's just denser.
No, you know, fake it.
I don't know why you want a smaller iPad.
Well, and you're bringing up the more important thing in my mind when I'm reading these stories and thinking about what Apple should do, and that is related to another story that's on here about Android, you know, gaining market share and taking up, you know, there's more Android devices out there than iOS devices, which we all knew was going to happen anyway. That's not the story, but the key to the success in terms of dollars and bottom line for Apple with the iOS devices is going to be keeping developers happy. And Apple's traditionally been okay at that. They need to start really buddying up to developers and doing everything that they can to help them and fragmenting the product lines and fragmenting the App Store and creating it, making it more difficult and having more devices and more screen sizes and, you know, making it harder for app developers to develop apps is going to be a surefire way when a competing platform gains market share for developers to go, well, if it's easier over there, and it's not easier over there, so they don't have that concern yet. But those are the kinds of things that I think Apple needs to watch out for.
Exactly. And they're also, I'm assuming, watching out for form factor issues that will annoy end users. Yep. So right now we have the iPad, which is our, 9.7-inch screen. And then we have the iPod Touch, which is, in essence, for practical purposes, an iPad mini with its, 3-inch screen-ish, something like that. And the iPod Touch fits in your pocket. The iPad doesn't. So with the iPad, you're gaining the bigger screen. You have more space for interfaces to work. And you have something where you can actually have a usable on-screen keyboard. Now, when you go down to the iPod Touch, it fits in your pocket. You have to have a completely different interface because of the screen size. You're limited to a thumb-style keyboard. So you're giving up things either way. If you go to, say, a 7-inch screen for an iPad, now you're giving up the usable keyboard, you're giving up the ability to put it in your pocket, and you've now created a device that's at a size where it's just ultimately going to be an awkward interface and awkward for carrying around. I just don't see Apple throwing something between those two sizes.
Yeah, I agree.
Julio, we're going to hit liquid metal before we get our picks?
If you want to. I don't really have a whole lot to say about the liquid metal other than it's cool. You want to introduce
that? Not really liquid.
Right. So let everybody know what's up with liquid metal.
Apple acquired the rights to licensing rights, exclusive licensing rights for a technology called liquid metal, which is a metal material, I guess, that kind of has some similar properties to polymer plastics in terms of how you can manufacture with it. Like, I think you can injection.
You can blow it like glass. You can blow it like glass.
And you can blow it like glass. And then it just has some structural properties that Apple might be really interested in. So they have the exclusive licensing for it for use in consumer electronic devices. And reportedly, I think it was Cult of Mac said that they'd been doing an interview with somebody within the company and that Apple's already used the technology in a product. It was supposed to be revealed on Monday. I didn't do the follow-up to find out.
Yeah.
So I need to go find out.
I saw something somewhere this afternoon, which I haven't had a chance to follow up on, that it's actually the SIM card extractor paperclip tool.
Yeah, that's what I saw. That it's
really?
Yeah. The SIM ejector tool.
So can I fold that thing in half and then fold it back and it won't? Because one of the things supposedly is that the metal can be kind of bent and folded and then it won't crimp and it won't show wear. And they had on the website, they had a cool video where they dropped some ball bearings on it in tubes. So they had it compared to steel and some other materials. And it's got a high elasticity, so it like really has bounce to it, which just kind of makes me crack up because I could imagine like my iPhone like encased in this liquid
bouncing
metal, and you drop it and it just bounces like a super ball kind of down the road.
Can it transform into other people like a Terminator?
No, it's not like
and
a
it says I'll be back.
Like
no, that one never said I'll be back. That one said I'm the other Terminator and I can turn my arms into knives.
Yeah, but it's anti-corrosive. It's, you know, it's got some really interesting properties that would make it an ideal material for Apple's devices. The one thing I couldn't find information on is if it has a lower resistance to, like, you know, blocking antenna signals and things.
Yeah,
like
I didn't
that.
See that either. Although that seemed like
really
it was implied.
If you're building, you know, iPhones and iPads out of this stuff.
Yeah, so. Maybe we should get a hold of Spencer Webb again and see what he thinks.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, but it would be cool if they made a metal cased iPhone that didn't require an antenna port.
Well, or I mean, there has been some mock-ups by some design firms that show you could have a straight piece of metal, right, and then the thing folds back on itself to kind of become a cover. And it's just one piece, or a MacBook that was all one piece of metal where the lid didn't have a separate hinge. It was just part of the structure of the notebook, which is kind of cool to think about.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. And no one else would be able to do it because Apple bought exclusive licensing to the technology.
Yeah, yeah. Only in mobile devices, though, right?
I think the report I read said consumer electronics.
Right, which
I don't know what that encompasses.
I would assume that would include things like laptop computers. That would be kind of cool to have a Terminator.
Yeah, consumer electronic
metal laptop until it stabbed me.
Yeah, I mean, if you made friends with it, it might stab people you don't like.
Which would be okay.
Yeah, yeah. So with that. Did we want to touch on the thing that you wanted to touch on, Adam?
What, that we're all having more sex than other people?
Yeah, because we have iPhones.
What an awesome pickup line. Hey, baby, I've got an iPhone.
Yeah. Hey, baby, I have an iPhone. Yeah, so according to OkCupid, based on some surveys they performed, iPhone users get more than BlackBerry and Android users.
Yeah.
That's worth buying an iOS device in and of itself.
Yeah.
Buy an iPhone, get laid.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I think that's the title.
And it wasn't gender specific either.
No, it's not. It's actually women get even more if they have an iPhone.
So, ladies.
Ladies.
Sign up for new contract.
Let's do it. Come on. And not that way. Yeah. Anyway. Moving on to our iDevice picks. Unless there's anything else.
Sorry,
you guys want to talk
I think
about.
We're good about getting more sex because I have an iPhone.
All right. Adam, you want to go first?
Totally using that line at Macworld.
No, you should. I sure hope you do.
Yeah. Slap. Yeah. I haven't used this too much. I just picked it up because I've been doing some design stuff, and I really didn't kind of think it was a tool that I was gonna like. It was I think it's $4.99. It's an app called Moodboard. Have you guys know about Moodboards?
No.
It's something in the design world. I guess it's pretty common if you do like interior design or fashion design or something like that. And the concept
and
is
you get the color sets and
you just have a surface, so it gives you kind of a blank slate, and they have a bunch of different backgrounds, and you can add different projects, different boards, and then what you do is you clip things onto it, so you can pull stuff from your photo library and you can drop photos onto it. So if you're, you know, redesigning the interior of your house, you could take some pictures and you're thinking about wall colors and stuff like that. But what was really neat about it to me is, so you drop these things on there, you can scale, you can rotate them. You can add little arrows and things like that. It has layers, so you can layer the items up and down. And then you also, though, can pull in color swatches, and not only that, you can actually pick up and sample colors from the items or the images or screenshots or whatever that you put into the app. And so you can start to build out a little like color swatch thing, like a, you know, those paint strips you pick up at the hardware store, and you can lay that down on your board too, so you can get an idea of feel for colors. It also has the ability to enter in manually a hexadecimal color. And then not only that, but it has, if you're doing web development or web projects, which is what I was kind of interested in it for, I can pull up samples of different sites that I might want to use for inspiration right within the app. So it has a little integrated built-in web browser. And then it has a little cropping tool. So what you can do is you can go to the web page and then pull up the cropping tool. And it kind of works like if you ever used the dash code stuff, you know, you could create a dashboard widget out of in Safari out of a website. Right. Have you guys ever done that?
Yeah.
You know, so it works like that feature. It gives you little crop points and you can go in and then you say crop and save and it will automatically drop that right onto your board. So you can pull in different websites, start setting up color palettes, and then you can actually share them as well. So you can email them. You can send them to your photo library. What other features does it have? It has a bunch of custom backgrounds. I kind of wish you could set your own background, but they have these different surfaces. So they have like a corkboard surface or a metal surface or whatever to start with, that kind of blank slate that you start dropping things on. And the idea is you just can build these little mood boards to kind of give you a sense of color and feel and style for a design project you might be working on. So, and I think it's $4.90. They have a free version. I don't know what the difference is on the free version or the paid for version. I just went straight for the paid for version, and I want to say it was $4.99.
What's the app called?
Mood board.
Mood board. It's $6.99.
Oh, $6.99
for the mood board.
Yeah, so
Pro.
I might have been a little pricey, but when I actually got in and started using it, I'm very impressed at the feature set. Things like the integrated browser, it's made it really easy to pull elements together for a web design project, you know, which is what I was interested in it for. But I could see, you know, if you have an iPhone and you're taking pictures, you can pull stuff in from your photo library. So, you know, you're doing interior design or you're doing fashion design or something like that. You could take pictures of fabrics and then you could sample colors from those fabrics and start to build out color palettes and things like that. So I think it's going to be actually a very useful design tool, and the iPad's kind of perfect for it. The only thing about it that I haven't liked so far is you're kind of stuck with one board, one page of information, which is one iPad screen. You can't really scale, zoom in or zoom out. So if you have a lot of elements, you have to set up like another board. That makes sense.
That's true.
You can collect those under I think a project. So you can kind of assemble multiple boards within a project, but you can't expand the canvas of the individual board that you're working on.
Well, it's called Mood Board Pro, and it's $6.99.
Yeah, from Tiny Tribe.
Yep. Jeff, what's your pick this week?
Mine is totally mindless. And all right, so the deal is I was out with some friends the other day, and they and we all happen to be Doctor Who fans, and so they said, app we found, and it's called Sonic SD, and it's a virtual Doctor Who sonic screwdriver for your iPhone, and it's 99 cents, and it gives you the option of having the sonic screwdriver that the ninth and tenth Doctor used, and then the current sonic screwdriver that the 11th Doctor uses. And then for people that want to get totally tricked out, then it has River Song's sonic screwdriver from the episode where she's introduced to the Doctor. And so you just choose your sonic screwdriver, and then I think you just slide your finger up the screen and it starts sonic-ing. And that's it.
So what's a sonic screwdriver?
See, you make me sad inside. Okay, so
I'm asking for the listener. It's not me. I totally know, but it's for the listener.
Okay, so a sonic screwdriver is it's like a multifunction device that the Doctor uses in Doctor Who, and it allows him to unlock things and fix things and scan things. It is to Doctor Who like the tricorder is to Star Trek, where it can be it can handle every function you can possibly imagine, unless it's the function that lets you get out of the situation that you're in.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So, you know, it's a great plot device, a great tool for moving the story along, but it can never be the thing that fixes whatever has to be fixed so that the Doctor can be the hero. And yeah, so it's like a multi-purpose tool and scanning device that he carries around.
Cool. And it's 99 cents. It's called Sonic SD.
Right. Here we go. Sonic screwdriver sound.
Oh, okay. I feel like I've heard that before.
You probably have.
Cool. All right. So my pick is... It's a solitaire game. I don't remember what it's called. Hang on. I'm going back in iTunes. So I was looking at these other picks. Real Solitaire for iPad. I tried out the free version. It's actually $2. It's right now it's on sale for $2. So I think it's normally $4. But it's just it's a wonderful solitaire game for your iPad. The animations are really nice. They're not obtrusive or over the top. It's just exactly what you need to make it to have a really fancy, enjoyable solitaire experience on your iPad. It has its own custom, you know, you won the game, explosion of cards, and it's $2 and it works really well. It's really pretty too. And I like it, and it's solitaire, and I don't think there's anything more to say because it's solitaire. So it's called Real Solitaire for iPad. You can get the free trial version. I think it's called Real Solitaire for iPad Free or something like that. It's by Edge Rift Inc. and it rocks. So check out Real Solitaire for iPad. I think it's worth getting right now. $2. And with that, I'm just typing out my pick so I remember to write it down later. You can find our iPhone picks and the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com, of course. And if Jeff draws something while we're doing the show, that's where that shows up. And you can send feedback. You can send your questions, comments, audio comments, all that stuff to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And you can find Adam Christensen at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and twitter.com/mattcast. And of course, he has the wonderful... Is it called the member version of the Mattcast?
Yes.
What's the official name?
So it's the Mattcast Members Program.
The Mattcast Members Program can be found at member.mattcast.com.
Is it true that all the cool people have signed up for that?
That is true. Yes, that is official. That's what I thought.
All the cool kids.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Jeff Gamet is, of course, he's the managing editor at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. And twitter.com/jgamet. And of course, you can find his wonderful drawings on various items such as coffee mugs, t-shirts?
Coffee mugs, t-shirts,
tote bags?
I think there's some tote bags. There's women's panties.
Oh, there are panties now?
Yes.
On which store, the Zazzle or the Cafe Press?
Actually, I think I have different ones set up at both.
Okay. So it's an adventure wherever you go.
Right. At least one of them, I have it set up so you can have nightshade peeking over the counter at your butt.
Awesome. So check that out. Check out his stuff. CafePress.com.
When did you start doing them in color?
A what?
The picture from the last show was in color. I just saw it. I hadn't looked at it yet.
Oh, I occasionally do one in color. But typically, I don't have time to color one of my drawings during the show.
Oh, okay. So
that's why it's so rare that there's color. And I think you talked more than I did last week, which gave me time to do some coloring on that one. This week, I wouldn't shut the hell up, so I haven't had time to draw
anything. That's fine. Yeah, last week's one totally makes up for not having one at all for this week. So it's the Stargate on last episode.
I like the sad robot too.
Yeah.
Oh, the sad robot.
That was really good.
I did that one when we had our big antenna talk.
Yep.
Which is why he's holding part of his antenna in his hand. And when I finished drawing him, I didn't realize just how sad he really looks. I mean, that is a really sad robot. I feel bad for him.
Ooh, ceramic travel mugs, water bottles, clocks. You can get a clock or an apron. You can get just about anything.
Pretty much. I think you can...
Thong. You can get a thong.
Yep. There's the thong there. I can't remember what's on the thong.
Chicken. You can get a chicken with glasses on your thong.
Okay. Awesome, because who wouldn't want a chicken on their... Oh, it has glasses? It's a boy chicken, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is a boy chicken, if that's what glasses means.
Okay, now I totally get why I did that.
Okay.
Because another name for a male chicken. Oh, come on, do I have to take you all the way through it?
No, we got you.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good. Also, in addition, you know, you can check out the comments, and you can put comments on the individual podcast episodes on wehavecommunicators.com. For those who were interested in how I enabled tethering with my unlimited data plan in iOS 4, check out the comments on episode 96. I posted instructions for that. And, of course, you have to jailbreak and know enough to not screw up your phone. But it's fairly easy if you understand basic terminal commands. So, yeah, check it out. Wehavecommunicators.com. That's where everything is. And, of course, Jeff Gamet's Cafe Press is cafepress.com/jgamet. And his Zazzle store is zazzle.com/jgamet. And you can find my Little Reviews account on Twitter. It's lilreviews.com or twitter.com/lilreviews. And with that, we're done. We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators. Say bye, guys.
Bye. We'll miss you while we're gone.
See ya.
An iPod. A phone. And an internet.